Podcast 66, The Greatest Commandment. The gospel reading for this podcast is Mark chapter 12, verses 28 to 34. Mark 12 as a chapter is a part of a series of interchanges between the Sadducees, the Pharisees, and Jesus about a number of questions. And they are all questions around the Torah, or Law and the Prophets, the scriptures of what we call the Old Testament. Now, we may not have much sympathy for the Pharisees and the Sadducees, but one thing you have got to say for them is that they were diligent in their study of the Old Testament. Both the Pharisees and the Sadducees are suspicious and hostile to Jesus for a number of reasons. Thus, the questions they engage Jesus with in this chapter in Mark's Gospel and the debates they seek to draw him into are not neutral or objective. In most of these interchanges, they are looking for something to hang Jesus on. For example, in Mark 12:13, the Gospel records that the Pharisees went out and laid plans to trap him in his words. They then pose the question about paying taxes to Caesar, trying to trick Jesus into either encouraging resistance to the Roman authorities, or making him align himself as a collaborator with the Romans. Jesus stuns them with his unique response, and they are amazed at this. The Sadducees then come back at Jesus with a theological question, trying to prove their point, as they believed, that there is no resurrection. Jesus deals with this question, and again, both Mark and Matthew record the astonishment of the Sadducees and the crowd with his teaching. And now in this passage that we're reading today, one of the teachers of the law comes back for another question, sort of like tag wrestling. And this time he asks something deceptively simple and seemingly innocuous. "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Now, this was not a new question among Jewish scholars of the time. This question was endlessly debated, and there was much argument among scholarly Jews about which was the greatest commandment. We must also be aware that the teacher of the law wasn't just talking about the Ten Commandments, but about the 613 commandments listed in the Torah. 248 of these are positive, and 365 are negatives. They constitute the detail of do's and don'ts of the Jewish law in the books of Deuteronomy, Exodus, and Leviticus. Why does the teacher of the law ask this question? Given the hostile nature of both the Pharisees and the Sadducees towards Jesus, I think that it is unlikely this was a genuine inquiry, although it may have been. It was certainly a probing question to find out how orthodox Jesus' beliefs were about the heart of the Torah, the core of the Jewish faith. This is more the question of an expert lawyer to a potential heretic to check out just where they sit in terms of the received wisdom of the theological orthodoxy of the day. Jesus answers this question by quoting two verses from Old Testament scripture, and in doing so he gives a very orthodox and acceptable answer for the Pharisees, one that would be commonly held by many of the scholarly Jews listening to the answer. How do we know this is an orthodox Jewish response? I think there are two reasons. Firstly, because of the parallel passage in Luke 20:10, verses 25 to 37, Jesus actually asks the question he is being asked in Mark. What is written in the law? How do you read it? And in that passage in Luke, the teacher of the law gives the same answer that Jesus supplies in this chapter of Mark. What Jesus gives as an answer to the teacher of the law is an accepted, well-known rabbinic answer to this question of what is the greatest commandment. Secondly, part of what Jesus quotes is the prayer known to all Jews, the Shema, which is prayed twice a day, morning and night, by all devout Jews in Jesus' time and by all devout Jews in our time. But interestingly, no one, including the expert in the law, picks up on the fact that Jesus actually misquotes one of these verses. Deuteronomy 6 verse 5 reads, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength." But what Jesus says is, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind." So Jesus swaps out the word mind for strength. Why does he do this? For those people who think that Christianity is a religion where you can check your brain in at the door of the church, note that Jesus deliberately adds our cognitive abilities to the range of ways we are required to show love for God. Jesus identifies that we are to use our mind to study and consider the scriptures. Being a Christian is more than just an intellectual pursuit. It must also involve our heart and soul and feelings and passion. But it does include the mind. Our minds are part of our gift from God, and God expects us to use them to study the scriptures as part of growing in the faith. We should diligently study scripture. When we do that, we are obeying Jesus' command. The second verse Jesus quotes is from part of Leviticus 19 verse 18. And in Leviticus, this verse says, "Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." In terms of this verse in the context of Leviticus, neighbor is not just anyone, but this term is strictly confined to fellow Israelites, i.e. other Jews. However, we see in the parallel passage in Luke 10:25-37, Jesus immediately follows up this statement, "But love your neighbor as yourself," with the parable of the Good Samaritan, and so redefines the term neighbor to mean a much broader and more inclusive term than just fellow Jews. If these verses sound vaguely familiar, it's because they form part of our communion liturgy. If you look at the top of page 406 of your prayer book, you will see this: "Hear the teaching of Christ. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. This is the first commandment. And the second is this: you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Now, as I said before, this is part of the Shema, the Jewish creed. But the full Shema consists of three scripture passages: Deuteronomy 6:4-9, 11:13-21, and Numbers 15:38-41. So in our liturgy, when we recite these words, which are thousands of years old, it reminds us of the Jewish roots that underpin our Christianity, and that we are connected to these Jewish roots through our Anglican liturgy. Getting back to Jesus' response, what is at the core of his answer to the question from the teacher of the law, "What is the greatest commandment?" Firstly, notice that Jesus responds with two commandments, not just one. Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as you love yourself. Loving God on its own is actually not enough. You must love your neighbor as well. The first commands he lists is about being passionately devoted to God with all your heart and soul and mind. And certainly sometimes I feel my love and devotion for God falls far short of this command. All we can ask is that God revives that passion in us, and it's not something we can do in our own strength. Secondly, note that Jesus commands us to do these things. These are commandments. This is not nice to have or do this if you want to. This is a must-do item. Apart from this occasion, reported both in Mark and Matthew and Luke, the other place commandment occurs in the Gospel is in John 13:34, where Jesus tells the disciples, "A new commandment I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another." So the Beatles weren't wrong when they sang "All You Need Is Love" in 1967. Jesus has only given us three commandments, and all three are about love. Firstly, love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Secondly, love your neighbour, and that means anyone you come in contact with, like you love yourself. And thirdly, love each other, fellow Christians, as Jesus has loved us. So Jesus sets the bar incredibly high for us as disciples. We must all pray to grow in God's grace and knowledge so we can be obedient to these commandments.